Both games were 34-14?
No. Pittsburgh was 34-17.
So that was a crazy rule. Kobe scored 81 points, right?
What?
Kobe scored 81 points, right? Just
no, he didn't.
That's the crazy. I heard it outside.
Why is he scared?
Kobe had another game with him?
Is that kind of
accurate? Yeah, it's
Chamberlain had 100.
Who's Chamberlain? How long ago? 100 years ago?
No, not quite. Who's Chamberlain? You call yourself a basketball fan, you don't know who Will Chamberlain is?
He's 552. He had 81 points?
In the first half.
Why is that happening? Why is that happening?
Kobe Bryant had 81 points the other
day? Last.
Huh?
42
shots.
Who did play?
How many free throws?
He was 18
to 20
from the free throw?
Kobe
had
81
points the other night?
Is that normal though?
I don't
know, that's normal.
That's probably most second.
Most points aside from Chamberlain.
They had one year where Davy Thompson and George Gervin were fighting for the scoring title. On the last day of the season, Davy Thompson put in 63. I think George Gervin put in 73. He needed 68. After Davy Thompson scored 63, he needed 68, and he scored 73. He said, "I kept shooting just in case somebody miscalculated." So what he got, he said, he kept on shooting.
What page is it?
Page 552. The Iceman. Never heard of George.
Can't think of roll.
The IV.
Yeah.
Who are you, Omer? We started to talk about this yesterday, last time. Who are you, Omer? Marba Buster, Marba, the more meat, the more worms. A Mishnah Chaz. Marba Nafasa, Marba Dogo, Marba Noshim, more wives, more shopping, the more witchcraft you are susceptible to. Marba Shvachos, Marba Zima, the more maid service, the more immorality you are going to leave yourself prone to. Marba Avodim, Marba Guzzle, the more employees you have. The more slaves you have, the more stealing. Slaves are going to steal you blind. And if you have employees, employees are going to steal you blind. Now, the flip side is Marba Torah, Marba Chaim. First five things were the five things that excess of these five things are bad for you. Now the mission is going to go through five things where the excess is good for you. Marba Torah, the more Torah, Marba Chaim, the more life, the more you're long. We said length of life, quality of life. Marba Yeshiva, Marba Chochma, the more you stay in Orsamach, the wiser you'll become. Marba Yeshiva, the more you sit, that's why it's called Yeshiva, because you sit there, you sit and you learn, you sit and study. The more you sit and study, the wiser you will become. Marba Eitza, Marba Tzivun, and I hear you have to be very careful. The more advice you get, the more understanding you'll get. Now, here, you have to just know very practically in life, there are two types of advice. Right, there's one pasuk that says Uchula Birov Yoes. The more advice you get, the more your deliverance comes. The deliverance comes by soliciting advice. If you're confused in life, you solicit advice, then you get clarity. You just have to be careful, because what you don't want to do is sometimes you're in a situation where, you know what, you solicit advice and then you hear what everybody has to say. Then you can analyze the data and come up with what's a good thing, what the best approach will be. There's another situation where I need to be told what to do. When you need to be told what to do, you don't want to go around running around to people and getting advice. Right? Then you're going to just get confusion. So, for example, a guy's going out with a girl, and you've been introduced to a girl in Shidduch, and you've gone out five or six or seven or nine times, you're trying to make a decision, should you marry her or not? Now, often what happens, a guy's going out on Shidduch, what happens is, that when you're going out, because it is for the purpose of matrimony, so your entire mindset is different, and you become a nervous wreck, and you realize that this is the end of your life, and you realize that there's a very, very, very big decision. So it's not like dating, and it's not like any of the other goofing around, and now it becomes a very, very serious decision. What happens to many people when they are going out, which will probably happen to you, you get to a point where you've got as much data as you're going to get. This is what we're talking about in the Gemara here. You've gone out with this girl, you've gone out with her 7, 8, 10, 12, 50, 1,000 times. Doesn't make a difference how long. You've got to the point where I now know the available data, as much available data as there is before you're married. There's all the available data is there. Is that sufficient in order to get married? This is a very tricky situation. There is nothing more available. You know who's here. Now the question is, should I marry her or not? I should you or not? That's only one situation of many. There could be a situation where you know the available data is that you've graduated and you've got a degree. Should I go and take on this job? I find the job boring, or the job does not pay enough, or I might have other options. If I go to school, I get another job. At a certain point, you got to make a decision. Now, there are certain times where the decision is simply for, I don't have enough data. I need to know, I want to make a decision, and I need to know what it's like being a dentist. So then I would go around talking to dentists and find out, well, this dentist is living in a villa, and this dentist is doing well, and this dentist has mother-in-law living with him, and this dentist, every dentist got his own situation, right? You're right. Now, I got to analyze that dentist. Well, mother-in-law living with him, he could have it to anybody. It's got nothing to do with being a dentist. This guy lives in a villa. That seems to be a dentist seems to be doing very well. I take a look at all the data and say, you know what, this I think I want to do. Then you have another guy who says, I know all the data, and I know it. Is that a good enough reason for me to make this choice? Then you need somebody to give you guidance, and you don't want to get guidance from more than one person. You go to your rub, you find a rub, somebody who can guide you, and he's going to make that decision for you. So when it says Marba Eitza, Marba Zvuna, that means the more Eitza you get, the more wisdom, the more insight, the more understanding you get, that's where you're looking to accumulate data. But if you need somebody to give you an absolute decision, there's a mistake that you should have guys make all the time. They start running around, they got to make a decision. Then they ask somebody, and then they go and ask somebody else. What are you asking somebody else for? You went and asked the first person. The guy says, should I marry her or not? The first person, yes, you should marry her. Okay? Then he goes to another guy, the other one says, don't marry her. What did you go to the second one for? All you did was you opened yourself up. You left yourself vulnerable to a lot of confusion and aggravation. Marbit tzedakah, marbit shalom. The more tzedakah you give, the more shalom there is. Now, what does that mean? What does that mean? The more tzedakah you give, the more peace there is. Marbit tzedakah, marbit shalom. So, the portions say, first of all, the more tzedakah you give, the more shalom people are at with you. People like charitable people. Everybody is at peace with a charitable person. Marbit tzedakah, marbit shalom. The more tzedakah you give, the more people are going to be favorably disposed towards you. Especially people who want money from you. So, marbet zakat, marbet shalom. That's number one. Number two, there's a medrash that says, if you took all of life's suffering, medrash says, if you took all of life's suffering and you put it on one side of the scale, and you put poverty on the other side of the scale, poverty would outweigh all other suffering. Now, I'm sure there are exceptions. I'm sure there are exceptions. There, my friend, I have a friend who was just NIFTA. A friend of mine was just NIFTA last week. There's a guy who 15 years ago had a liver transplant, and there was complications during the liver transplant. He had both knees amputated, both legs amputated above the knee. Right. So he was just NIFTA last week. Right. That, you know, that form of suffering, you know, arguably is worse than poverty. But if you take all of daily, you know, your average hassles and aggravations and flat tires and everything else, and you put poverty on the other side of the scale, poverty would outweigh it. Because when you're poor, when a person is poor, the less money, when you're rich, you can basically, people say, well, money doesn't take care of all problems. Right? A good hefty share of them are taken care of. You're right, it doesn't take care of all the problems, but it sure is a good start, right? You know, if you gotta start dealing with problems, one of the best ways to start dealing with problems is have some money. If you have money available, it takes care of a lot of life problems. Doesn't take care of all the problems. Then they hear all the problems. Like there's a problem having more money, right? You know, but it's a good start. Now, the more money you have, the more money you give away. Of all people, you know, the Gemara says there are four people. There are three people, I think, who your average person can't stand them. There are certain people we have no tolerance for. There are certain types of people. One of the people the Gemara says is what's called a dal ge'e. A dal ge'e means an arrogant pauper. An arrogant pauper. If a poor man walks into the room strutting, a poor man comes along strutting into the room, a beggar is strutting. How do you feel? What are you strutting about? What do you got to strut about, right? A dal ge'e, a haughty, an arrogant pauper. What do you got to be arrogant about? There's what's called a zake minai. A zake minayak literally means an adulterous old man, right? In our context, in our jargon, it'd be a dirty old man, right? Why is there even such an expression? Ooh, he's a dirty old man. Why isn't there an expression, he's a dirty young man? Or, ooh, he's a dirty young man. Or why is there the expression doesn't even exist? The expression is that he's a dirty old man. right? There's something about that that rubs you the wrong way. There's something about that that you find it very distasteful. If you walk into, if you saw somebody young doing something unseen, right, or looking at something unseen, what would your feeling be? All right, you know, that's life, right? Natural, normal. If you saw somebody older doing it, it would be very distasteful. Like, even though, too, what's the difference if he's doing it or he's doing it? The answer is that it's distasteful because it's going against natural law. It's going against the laws of nature. A haughty pauper is somebody who's going against the laws of nature. By nature, a pauper should be very humble. So a guy who's poor and he's haughty, it rubs you the wrong way. You got nothing to be haughty about. If a guy's wealthy, a wealthy person who struts, a guy told me he once met Shaq. One of the guys met Shaq. He said, he's a nice guy, a really nice guy. It's a bit arrogant, but he has what to be arrogant about. If I met him, if he was arrogant, that's okay. When you're earning, you know, $114 million in 7 years, yeah, you can strut. Go ahead, you can strut. When you're working, you can earn some math salary, you know, walk humbly, young man. Right? If you're making $114 million a year, then you got a right to me. Then I could tolerate, even though it's not, I could tolerate it. There are certain things that are intolerable. The other thing that's intolerable is an atheist, a wealthy atheist. What's called an usher mikachesh, a wealthy man who denies the existence of God. Right? What's your impression if you're sitting with a Holocaust survivor, and a Holocaust survivor says, "Yeah, no, but I don't believe there's no God." What's your reaction to that? I think it's everybody. I got what after what he went through. He doesn't, but you know, I can understand it. He probably doesn't. You know what I'm saying? What's your reaction when you see some guy who's wealthy, he's got a lot of money, he's leaving, you know, and I don't think there's a God, you know? What's your reaction to that? Let's just be quiet and say thank you, will you? Don't be such a smart guy. Just say thank you 3 times a day. Don't be such a philosopher. That rubs you the wrong way because it's not that. A guy who's got money, you should, of all people, be thanking Coach Royal. Just thank him. No, don't be so smart. It rubs you the wrong way. A poor person, if a poor person is complaining about his lot in life, what's your if you meet somebody from Long Island, right, who's complaining about how rough things are financially, right, what's your reaction? You know, like, all Jews complain. If a Jew says, "How's business?" Could be better. That means he's doing great. Right? If a Jew says, "Oh, it's been a rough year," that means he's fabulously wealthy. Right? But when a Jew says, Jews never talk about how much money they got. If a guy who you know got money and he's complaining, well, you know, things could be better. How do you feel? I said, give me a break, buddy. Right? If a poor guy is complaining, a poor guy's upset, and a poor guy's complaining, you know, God gave me a raw deal in life. What would your reaction be then? I said, I can't judge the guy. He's poor, not his fault. I don't know how I'd be in other circumstances. Who is it more than anybody else who's got a gripe? Not a legitimate, but who can justify, in his own mind, can justify a gripe against God? A poor man. Everything for a poor man. The Gemara says, "Kol yimei ani rai." All of a poor person's days are bad. Even Shabbos is bad for him, because after Shabbos comes Sunday, and on Sunday he's got to go back to his regular diet. So now Shabbos food is going to affect him more negatively, because he's not used to eating that kind of rich food all week. A rich guy eats on Shabbos, he eats on Shabbos what he eats during the week, so he's okay with it. He handles it well. This poor guy's got a stomachache on Sunday, because Shabbos he eats differently. So Kol yimei ani rai. All of a poor person's days are bad. All of a poor person's days are bad. He suffers all the time. So if he's got a gripe against the Kodesh Baruch Hu, we can understand it. If you give tzedakah and you alleviate the suffering of a poor person, then you've created shalom, you've made peace between who and whom?
Between
the poor man and God. So the Mishnah says, Marbe tzedakah, marbe shalom. It means by giving tzedakah, you've increased shalom. That means you've made peace, so to speak, between the poor man and God.
Sure.
Yes. Can we open up the window a little bit? Yeah,
Are you supposed to honor someone who's done very well financially? Like, I mean, isn't there like a concept?
There is an idea that somebody who's done well financially has been blessed by God.
So it's someone like Shaq, for example, is making $114 million a year. Is there, you know, when?
Oh, I would honor him for other reasons, but depending on how close they are to proximity, you know, if somebody who has done well, there is a certain idea of a person having been blessed. Right now, the Orchos Tzadikim talks about how you can tell whether the money is a blessing or not. It depends what the person does with their money. Right, but at the end of the day, I don't know about Shaq. But by the way, when Shaq signed his contract, that first he came out with a statement. He said, "The trouble with the world is it's too materialistic." And then the next day he signed for $114 million.
Great.
Right? And then they're grateful. The first he said the trouble to the world is it's too materialistic. That was his philosophical. The next day he signed for $114 million. And the day after he said this ain't about money. That's my favorite one of all. Right? So at the end of the day, if you see a wealthy Jew, you honor him. A wealthy Jew you honor him because he
Roughly
doesn't.
He used that money for No.
It's all his very indulgence stuff. But if a guy's giving money, there's a certain. I don't know about judging him for the judging what he's doing with his money. At the end of the day, somebody who's got money, there is a certain. We regard that as bracha. We regard that as bracha.
So
right?
Does that have money?
You don't have to stand up for him.
A lowly person?
You don't have to stand up for him. There's no halacha to stand up for a wealthy person.
Okay, what about a poor person?
What about him?
Do you assume that Hashem, he's a lowly person?
No. We don't know why. No, it could be because we're testing him. It could be because he's going to be on a very high migraine. We don't know. I told you about the guy with the elevator shaft. There's a guy I met once who had stepped into an elevator shaft where the elevator wasn't there. He fell four stories. And he pushed the elevator button, the elevator, he fell four stories in the elevator. The guy was in a coma for 3 weeks. Now, this guy was extremely wealthy. I happened to meet him in a city in America. So the guy had a habit, so I told you about this guy. Very low voice. I really don't like the guy. I really do not like this guy. We're sitting in a room. Everybody. So what that meant was he's so used to everybody listening to him because he's wealthy. And he talks. I know another guy like that. I was thinking about this the other day. I know a guy who did very well. Guy made some money, and the guy also he talks, and he just you can see when he's talking. Everybody in the room has to now be quiet because he's talking. And he expects that everybody's going to listen to you. Got a lot of money. Right? And psychologically, when somebody has a lot of money, we spoke about this yesterday in the Plymouth year. Somebody's got a lot of money talks, most people listen. Because A, if he's got a lot of money, he probably knows what he's doing. And B, deep down inside, when you meet a really wealthy person, if Bill Gates were to walk into this room right now and start talking about, anything, I think we talk about the Super Bowl. Bill Gates would walk into you and talk, everybody would sit there quietly and listen to him because you're hoping in your heart of hearts that he's suddenly going to say, you know what, I really like you. Right? That's what you're really saying. Everybody in the room, they just kind of look like he's pretending to be as disinterested as possible, and you're now vice president of operations. Right? And so, that's what you're hoping. So when a Bill Gates, everybody's all telling everybody, quiet, Bill Gates, that's a lot. What does he know? Half the time they may make money where in spite of themselves, not because of themselves. But there is a certain awe. Now, it's very important. Gentlemen, imagine... I'm going to give you a cheerful thought to think about. Imagine your tombstone. Imagine you're horizontal, and they're putting you in the ground, and then they're going to put up a tombstone. What would you like to have written on your tombstone? Just think about this. It's a sobering thought, isn't it? Right? Yeah. Enjoy lunch, fellas. What would you like? What would you like to have? Just think what you would like to have. People have tombstones. What would you like to have written on a tombstone? Right? First, you have to think about this, because they're not going to write something unless you've earned it. But you got to earn it. If you want this right, well, he was really kind and generous. You got to be kind, generous, and considerate. You can't be a jerk and have them write on the tombstone. You know, story about the guy. Yeah, the guy dies, so they call the rabbi to do a eulogy. You know, old Frank dies, they call the rabbi to do the eulogy. So the rabbi starts, doesn't know him very well, starts asking around, right? And the reports aren't very good. Right? Nobody likes them. Right? Nobody likes this guy. Now you can't hear guy. Can't get a kind word about him. Everybody he asks you, just lock the button. Anybody he asks about him has nothing good to say. Finally, the rabbi gets up to the funeral. He says, "Well, old Frank, his brother was worse." That's the best thing he can say about it. Right? If you aren't good, people aren't all of a sudden going to come up with nice things to say about you. So a person decides, and that's why you find, by the way, older people. You see people in the 60s and 70s. You meet guys who all of a sudden you watch them, you'll see in every shul, all of a sudden there's a guy who's starting to get involved in a little more in the shul. He puts away the sidurim, right, and he drives the rabbi around, and he gets involved. People start doing that, number one, because they see that everything's been emptiness up until this point. There's got to be some substance in life. Number two, people are starting to think, what are people going to say about me? Oh, well, at least they'll say I put away the sidurim in the shul. Now, something, people are desperate for something to say because they realize, why is it at an Italian funeral, right? An Italian funeral or an Irish funeral, when they eulogize an Irishman, right? Nobody gets up and says, you know, oh, John, you know, he could put scotch, he could put away scotch like nobody's business. They never, even at an Irish funeral, they don't talk about how much he could drink. No one ever gets up at a funeral and says, you know, well, Bob, you know, he really liked cars. He was really into cars, right? They always struggle with something about how he was kind, or he was charitable, or he was nice, or something. Because even they understand at the moment of truth what's real. Even they understand what the real values are. Everybody answers that. Everybody, nobody says, you know, he could really do a cheeseburger. You know, he was him and a cheeseburger. You know, that nobody ever talks about. He chased women his entire life. He was really, that's what he. Nobody ever says that, because at the moment of truth, everybody knows what the real values in life are. The person has to live his life with the focus of what he wants to have written on his tombstone. Now that's why it says, "Kona Shemtov." If you've acquired a good name, "Kona La'atzmo," you've acquired it for yourself. When you acquire a good name, the good name cannot be taken away from you. And it doesn't belong to anybody else. If you're a charitable person, if you're a kind person, if you're an unselfish person, what you acquire, kana shame tov, if you acquire a good name, kana la'atzvo, that belongs to you. Nobody can take that good name away from you unless you blow it yourself. And by the way, you could blow a good name in one moment. You see people, and it's also, I'm sure in your shul, at some point or other in your shul, you've seen somebody loses it. For some reason, also some guy in shul starts yelling at somebody, a crazy, somebody sitting in somebody's seat in shul, and some guy all of a sudden starts screaming at him, right? And he could have 20 years or 25 years he lived in the community, and from that point on, everybody's always going to remember him. He's the guy who lost it by the seat, right? I told you, in our shul growing up, I wasn't there that day. A guy turned around, telling two guys were talking during laning. The guy turned around, and right, the guy just kept on talking. He just turned around and he roundhouse when he caught him right in the jaw. Clocked him right. I wasn't there that day at Joel, right? He clocked him right in the middle of that thing. Right? Everybody's gonna remember for the rest of the matter how no matter how many of the 1,000 years will pass. It could be 1,000 years, and nobody talked after that during nothing, right? At least that worked. You know, 1,000 years could pass. And the guy could set up charity organizations, and he could be charitable, and he could believe a Tama. Whenever people see him, what are they gonna be looking at? That's the dude who clocked them. that's how they're always going to see him. There's like an old guy, a couple guys go yelling, and once in a while the people go berserk in the show. They just go berserk. I'm sure you've seen it. Guy's just having a bad day, and he takes it out on the guy who's sitting in his seat. Right? And over a seat in shul, to serve Hashem, over a seat in shul, you're willing to throw away your entire reputation. Right, you can lose it very quickly. You lose your reputation very quickly. Chazanish said a person could ruin in 10 minutes. A person could do something where he's going to regret for the rest of his life. Right, so it comes on. Kana shame tov, kana la'atzmo. A guy acquires a good name; he acquires it for himself. When you've acquired a good name, nobody can take it away from you. Number one. Number two. Kana shame tov, kana la'atzmo. The word la'atzmo could be understood if he has acquired his essence. If you've acquired a good name, you've acquired an essence. And otherwise. In other words, you've been put in this world to bring yourself to a certain level, to bring yourself to a certain form of completion, to achieve something. If you acquire a good name, whatever that name is, that is the essence of what it is that you've meant to achieve in this world. The Kanalo Divrei Torah, then the Mishnah ends up on a positive name, something positive. Kanalo Divrei Torah, Kanalo Chayei Olam Haba. You acquire Divrei Torah, you acquire the world to come. Now, there's a very important point here, which is that in order there's a schus that you have to have. It's not enough to be involved in other mitzvahs. You have to be involved one way or another. You have to be involved in learning Torah. You could do all the mitzvahs in the world, but you have to have the mitzvah of Torah to your credit as well. And you're in your ledger. And therefore, if you want a portion in the world to come, there are opinions that say that you've got to have some connection to Torah. That's why the Gemara says, how do women get their portion in the world to come? Hani Noshim and Mike Kazakhim, where do women have their merit? So the Gemara says their merit is that they take their children off to school, the cheder, and they wait for their husbands to come back for the Beis Medrash. The commentaries ask, now, why is that the women's merit? I mean, women do a lot of things. Why is their merit that they wait for their husband to take their children off? Now, what about the fact that they're bringing guests on Shabbos and they're always doing chesed and so on and so forth? The answer is, yes, they have other merits. But there's got to be a merit of Torah. You have to have a connection to Torah. Talmud Torah connect Gula. So, Kana Divrei Torah, Kana L'Chayei Olam Haba. Any questions? Okay.